Probing space and time. Probing for the truth. What is this film? What are they? From where or whence do they come? What is their purpose? Why is it happening? Why do they both reveal and lurk in the shadows simultaneously? This is The Probe.
Good afternoon, dear listeners. This is Robert Selby. The Probe is a show about unexplained phenomena in space, UFOs and alien abductions and the sort. And Mark O'Connor and Ed O'Reilly, the three of us do those shows once a month. This month, we're doing the Rendlesham Forest incident. And that is something that took place in Great Britain, in England, December 1980. It is sometimes referred to as the English Roswell. We will discuss it, and we'll try to be neutral about it. And then, as usual, we'll give a bit of a summary to see which one of us really believes that it took place. Let's start with Ed O'Reilly. Could you bring us up to snuff, Ed?
Okay. Well, as Robert just indicated, it's commonly referred to, actually, it's got kind of two names, so it's a little confusing. Sometimes it's called the Bentwaters incident, sometimes it's called Rendlesham. Typically, Rendlesham is the more common name. So let me just mention, it happened in Great Britain, as Bobby said, December 1980. It happened over three consecutive nights, starting December 25th, Christmas night, through to the 27th. Now, Bentwaters and Woodbridge are two sections or two subdivisions of the same, I guess you could call it a cooperative NATO venture between the governments of the United States and Great Britain. Bentwaters is the American portion, and Woodbridge is, I assume, is the British portion. Rendlesham is a forest. It's Rendlesham Forest. It separates the two sections of the base. In December 1980, starting the 25th, something happened there. It's referred to...
Christmas Day.
Yeah, right, Christmas Day. Actually, you know, we could just cut this show short. It was friggin' Santa Claus. Let's get out of here. they tried to shoot down Santa.
I think there is a Christmas song with Santa coming in a UFO, isn't there?
I think there is, yeah, yeah. But anyway, seriously, something landed, apparently. Some dispute over that, but, you know, it does look like something landed. It was eyewitnessed over by various people over the three nights, not always the same people. And it's a fascinating case. At least I think it is, and Bobby and Mark can put their own point of view across, and we'll kind of maybe hopefully summarize this towards the end of the segment. But it does appear, if you go by the old maxim, where there's smoke, there's fire, that something happened there. Something apparently quite strange because, and there's an interesting YouTube video if you want to really, on your own, listeners, do some research or just do some, you know, if you have even a mild interest in the subject, and I would assume if you're listening to this program, you do, just type in on YouTube, Nick Pope Rendlesham, R-E-N-D-L-E-S-H-A-M.
That's Saint Nick.
Saint Nick Pope, yeah, it's a code word. And according to him, and I guess other sources, the airmen, and it British soil, but all of the personnel, almost all the personnel, there was a man by the name of John Burroughs, was that it, Mark?
The police officer, yeah, his last name for sure is Burroughs.
Burroughs, okay.
I'm not sure about his first name.
He's a British constable, British police officer. Penniston is one of the other major figures in this.
Jim Penniston, right?
Jim Penniston.
He's the chief security officer for the Bentwater United States Air Force Base.
So almost all of the eyewitnesses are American Air Force personnel.
With the exception of Burroughs.
Yeah. Right. And according to Pope, and I think Nick Pope, you may have, if you've seen any UFO documentaries.
On Rendlesham.
Not just Rendlesham. He's kind of ubiquitous, just like over here in North America, Stanton Friedman is. And I think in the UFO community, he's up there with Friedman. Now, some may prefer Friedman, some may prefer Pope. Okay, who is Nick Pope? Nick Pope used to be an investigator for the DOD. And you're going to hear that expression a lot. It's simply the British, not DOD, sorry, MOD, Ministry of Defense. So when you hear MOD, that's Ministry of Defense. That's the British Defense Ministry. He was a UFO investigator for that for many years. So he does have some credibility, some cred, as an investigator. And you will see, I find him quite credible. He's not, okay, you name it. What was that that old Marlon Brando movie in which he plays the biker? And someone comes up to him, I don't know if you remember. If you watch old movies, you'll remember this. He wasn't talking about belief, but someone comes up to Brando and says, "Where are you protesting?" Brando says, "What do you got?" Nick Pope isn't like that. If you follow the X-Files, Mulder and Scully, Mulder is the true believer. Scully's kind of, she comes over eventually during the course of the series to more of a belief pattern. Well, being abducted will do that to you. Well, unless you've got a really close mind. Pope is kind of Scully. More than Mulder. So, and that adds some credibility because, you know, there's two schools. You don't want someone who's going to believe everything is extraterrestrial. You don't want to believe someone who doesn't believe anything. You know, the house has to fall.
But Ed, excuse me, but he certainly doesn't look anything like Scully at all.
Well, no, that's true. Point of view. But
so what happened on December, the morning of December 26th?
They thought the, and remember, this is a top secret. In fact, there's some controversy to this day whether this base had nuclear weapons or not, and the British population wasn't too happy with the idea of American nuclear missiles on its soil. There was a big, lots of protest over that.
Right.
Well, on Christmas night, they thought a small plane had come down. Remember our show on...
Because they were seeing lights in this
window. Yeah, but something came down.
Right.
You remember our show on Shelburne, the thing off Nova Scotia?
Shag Harbor.
Shag Harbor incident. They thought an airliner had come down on the waters off Nova Scotia. Well, again, this one opens rather in a similar vein. They thought something had come down. Yeah, something did have come down, but it wasn't a plane. And Peniston actually made a sketch of what he saw. And it was a craft. It had hieroglyphics on it. And
now, he was the chief security officer, right. So he went into the woods with some other people to search, thinking right. They were doing a recovery rescue, making way for emergency
vehicles.
Or a
security breach.
Yeah. He ended up seeing...
A craft.
Do we want to hear him describe the craft he saw?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
All right, here we go. This is Jim Peniston, chief security officer, in December 26, 1980. He's the guy in charge. He's in the woods. This is what he sees.
The craft was a triangular craft. It was black in color, very shiny. It was metal, but it was smooth as glass. Inside the fabric of this triangular craft, a light movement of red and blue running through the fabric of it. I had paced it off, and it measured 9 feet by 9 feet by 9 feet. Approximately, based on my height, I'm 6'2", so I estimated it at 7 feet tall. It was very small for aircraft.
Mm. And apparently, didn't he go on to describe that it seemed to be trying to repair itself?
He did say that very interesting kind of aspect to it, where he said there was no exhaust, no intake, no windows, no manifold, no doors, but he had an impression that the craft was in trouble, in distress, and was actually repairing itself, which kind of a cool thought. Now, that's just an impression. That's what he's...
And around the perimeter of the craft, he described that it was very silent. When he approached the craft, there was no sound.
And it did lift off eventually because it lifted off and transposed itself into several, I guess you'd have to describe it almost like a light show.
Right, so he's the one that sees this craft. He makes a drawing, like you mentioned, Ed.
Yeah.
Do we want to hear him talk about this whole effects of him approaching the craft and what he experiences?
Yeah. Well, that's the most authentic.
Yeah.
Okay, this is Jim Peniston talking about what happens when he approaches the craft.
The immediate area around the craft, we noticed physical changes. We noticed that the sound was different. For example, the lack of sound around it was like a deadening sound. We were hearing animals before we got within like 10 feet. And then once we got within this area right around the craft, it went silent. Then we started feeling static electricity on our skin. One of the unusual effects is that once we entered this immediate area around the craft, it felt like everything went in slow motion. It felt like there was a dragging of time. We did have discrepancies on our watches after we left the area of 45 minutes. And what appeared to be us just examining the craft for 5 or 10 minutes actually was over a couple hours out there. We did lose track of some time. We do know that we did have adrenaline going, but 2 hours is a long time to write off for adrenaline.
Okay, that to me is fascinating because unlike some UFO abductee experiences, missing time, but missing time meaning that in a lot of cases they're unconscious that time. You know, whatever happens to them on board ship, they come back. And, you know, like in the Allagash case, the big fire suddenly burned down to virtually nothing. So huge amounts of time. These people never lost consciousness. They were examining the craft for what they thought were 5 to 10 minutes, and it turned out 45 minutes.
I find that interesting, too, because...
Time dilation.
Yeah, I was starting to believe, well, maybe it was one of those experimental crafts from the nuclear side of the bases, but the fact that they lost time, that's one of the earmarks of...
And they were conscious.
Yeah.
And that's, it almost sounds like something relativistic, time dilation. You know what I mean by time dilation? If you're in a craft, the speed of light, 1 year will go by on board ship, 200 years will go by on the Earth because it becomes a different frame of time, different space-time because of the effects of the speed of light.
That's fascinating.
It is fascinating, yeah.
Don't say fascinating, Spock.
Well, it is interesting.
Too bad we should be playing that clip, too. But yeah, that to me was when I first heard about this case. The idea of, you can't really call it missing time because they weren't unconscious. I guess a time discrepancy. While they were awake, examining the craft?
So, you know, it's unclear to me, Ed, in my research, that there was more than just Jim Peniston that actually saw the UFO. He was the chief security officer. He went into the woods with, I think, maybe two other fellows.
Yeah.
And the reports that the other fellows filed did not say that they saw a UFO, or in this case, Jim Peniston claims he touched it as well.
I think maybe he was less afraid of his pension and his job. The others may have been afraid to be that candid about what they saw. He obviously wasn't for some reason.
The deputy commander of the base, and I wrote this down here.
And what's the deputy commander's name?
Charles Holt. Lieutenant Colonel Charles Holt, Deputy Base Commander.
So if you had somebody that was doing something wrong, does he get to say, Halt?
Halt, yeah.
Or I'll shoot.
Arret.
Sorry, Ed, go ahead.
Yeah. No.
Arret, right.
Yeah, stop. He went out on the third night, and I think, Mark, you mentioned just a little while ago that he had subsequently over the years, he said, I wish the hell I hadn't gone out.
Yeah, but, he says, I wish I'd send a subordinate. He's got it over the years.
In other words, pass the buck, right? And that rings true, doesn't it?
Pass the UFO.
Yeah. He is quoted as saying, and I quote, it was flying, so it must have repaired itself and lifted off again, because when they first found it, it was on the ground. Later, the third night, it was flying, so apparently whatever was wrong with it, it fixed itself. And he says, and I quote, flying with speeds and maneuvers he'd never seen before. It fired a narrow beam of light to the ground, which struck the ground, and the beam was about pencil width thin. And they were wondering if they were under attack. You know, if this beam comes down or if someone's shooting at us.
And of course, we...
So he obviously saw it.
We're nearly 100% certain there were nuclear-tipped ballistic missiles at that base.
Yeah. So Peniston is not the only one who saw it. There were several others, including eventually the base commander, deputy base commander, Charles Hull.
I'll take your word for it. I wasn't clear on that. For sure, Peniston said he saw it. He made a crude diagram.
I think he did.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Hull did as well. So it's not just one guy who, you know, one witness you might think, you know, like Whitley Strieber. You have, everything comes down to what Whitley Strieber says, and you have to either believe him or not, but there's different corroboration here.
Ed, did you read anything, because I know you're an astronomer, about the fireball that broke up over Great Britain, and it was sort of little lights from this fireball were falling to the Earth?
On the night of December 26th, was it, Bob?
I think it was, on the first night of the sighting.
Okay.
There was some talk about a Russian craft satellite re-entering or something.
Yeah. No? We should say to our listeners, because this might be a little bit confusing, but this is a multiple experience. There's 3 o'clock in the morning, the morning of December 26th, and then the investigation, while they were investigating that primary incident, they had another experience. So there was at least 2 experiences, and I think Ed's referring to 3. So for our audience out there, it is a little confusing. There's a primary experience where Jim Peniston sees a UFO, claims he even touched the UFO and had quite an experience. And then there's the investigation of that primary incident, which ended up being another incident in and of itself where they ended up experiencing lights coming toward them and firing beams to the ground and so forth, and maybe even a third one. So if you're a little confused out there, trust me, when we were researching this, it was a little bit confusing to get the facts straight, too.
Well, you know, this is like some of the cases we've done, which are, you know, like Aztec in New Mexico and also obviously Roswell in New Mexico. This probably, if you were to dig into all the accounts, all the information, you could do a week of shows on this thing. I mean, it's like an avalanche of material. Well, for one reason, it's only 37 years old. And there are eyewitnesses, obviously, still
They're
alive.
They're still living.
But if you want to say, okay, what makes this stand out? And to me, it's the idea that it's not just a craft on the ground, but apparently it was in the process of repairing itself. Excuse me, in 1980? I don't think we have do we have anything today that can actually repair itself?
The human body, man.
Well, sometimes and sometimes
not. By the way, was there any physical evidence left?
We'll get to that in a second. Because I don't know if you call it... I would say the physical evidence left, and let me get to that in a minute, is the health effects on the eyewitnesses. Because I guess you can say a physical effect is not just an implant, or it's not just a piece of a craft, it's just something unusual in health terms happened to the eyewitnesses. But the other thing, not just it was repairing itself, and not just that it apparently over the next couple of nights it turned in from a fly or from a grounded self-repairing craft into a light show, but that while they were examining it on the first night, they never lost consciousness. You know, it's not like they woke up, you know, hours later in the big fire like in Allagash had burned down, so they didn't, there's not missing time.
It's more like elongated time.
Well, or time dilation, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever done, I've never done anything that I thought was 5, maybe 10 minutes long and it turned out to be 45 minutes. That's just too much. So you've got time dilation and you've got a self-repairing craft. That's...
I've gone to meetings that were only supposed to be 10 minutes and they felt like 45.
I can't explain that. I mean, that is just X-Files weird.
Go ahead, Bob. You're going to
talk. I was going to talk about the lighthouse at Orford Ness.
Yeah.
It shed quite a steady light in the distance, and I'm wondering if maybe the people that saw the lights from the base, did that lighthouse have play into that?
Well,
was it maybe the lights from the lighthouse?
There's a program on Discovery. If it's, I don't know what would be on Rogers, but on Alliant, it's on 210. It's called Expedition Unknown, and you may have seen it. Josh Gates is the host of it. And it's not a bad show. It did a program on Rendlesham, but it just barely scratched the surface. You know, it was like, I wouldn't call it superficial, but like if there's 100 items to examine, he only did 2 or 3, which is okay. You've only got a 45-minute show. But one of the things he did, now the base is now defunct. The lighthouse is defunct. So there's no lighthouse. The lighthouse is there, but there's no light in it. So they got a lighting unit, installed it, so that it was at least briefly operational again. And then he went into the forest exactly where the craft was supposed to have landed, could not see the lighthouse.
Okay, the skeptics are saying the lights they saw were the lighthouse or stars, and of course, yeah, the believers, if you will, are saying it was a UFO. We actually have audio tape of the second experience as it happens.
A live transmission.
Why don't we let our audience actually listen to what they say and how they're feeling? You can hear it all. How about that?
Go for it.
Okay. So this is Colonel Halt making an audio tape. He was out investigating the first incident when all of a sudden he had a very extraordinary experience.
We're about 150 or 200 yards from the site. Everything else is just deathly calm. There's no doubt about it. There's some type of strange flashing red light ahead.
There's yellow.
I saw a yellow tinge in it too. Weird. It appears that he may be moving a little bit this way. It's brighter than it has been.
Yellow?
It's coming his way. Strange. Oh, well, why don't you get left? Let's approach to the edge of the woods up there. Can you undo without lights? Let's do it carefully. Come on. Okay, we're looking at the thing. We're probably about 200 to 300 yards away. It looks like an eye winking at you. It's still moving from side to side. And when you put the star scope on it, it sort of has a hollow center, a dark center. It's yeah, like a pupil of an eye looking at you and winking. And the flash is so bright to the star scope that it almost burns your eye. We passed the farmer's house and across in the next field. Now we have multiple sightings of up to 5 lights with a similar shape and all, but they seem to be steady now rather than a pulsating or glow with a red flash. We just crossed the creek, and we're getting what kind of readings now? Getting through 3 good clicks on the meter, and we're seeing strange lights in the sky.
Lighthouse my ass.
We can tell they are saying, right. Well, I think you summed it up pretty good, Ed.
Yeah.
Well, you know, next time he goes to the doctor,
lighthouse
my ass, you know, they might.
Well, okay, seriously, though, that lighthouse was always in operation while they were there. And I'm sure they've been through that forest at some point in the time they were stationed there. So all of a sudden, they're going to freak out. Even if they could see the lighthouse, which apparently they couldn't see it in the forest, according to the reenactment. So that's bullshit.
So Colonel Halt has a team of subordinates that have gone out to investigate the first incident when this light... So the audio you just heard is the investigation of the first incident, which turns into the second incident. And I will say this. You got multiple people all saying the same thing. You might even hear other voices on the tape. If I had experienced that and said, the lights are coming to me and sending down beams, I have to admit that I would be pretty insulted and upset if you said, It was just a lighthouse. I think I would know the difference. So I have to say, it does seem like something out there besides a lighthouse beam was happening. And plus, it was multiple colors. A lighthouse lamp's going to be one color, isn't it?
Yeah, white, usually, or whitish yellow.
Usually, right?
Yeah. You're not going to get, you know, kind of like a pyrotechnical display from a lighthouse. And, you know, just as an aside, that's one of the things about this whole, not just this case, but, you know, the skeptical point of view. Of course, you have to be kind of skeptical. You can't take everything, because otherwise every sighting would be extraterrestrial, and sometimes it's just Venus. But sometimes the skeptical community is really, as Mark just touched on, I mean, there's an expression which I won't say, don't do something down my back and tell me it's raining. Don't insult my intelligence. Not that my intelligence is any great thing, but, you know, come on. Don't talk about a UFO incident in a desert in New Mexico and try to put that off on swamp gas. And sometimes the skeptical, come on, guys, can't you come up with a better line than that? You know, I mean, it is insulting. You know, what do they think, we're stupid?
Well, one thing that I'd like to know your opinion on, guys, do you think the British government tried to cover this incident up? I mean, they said that they didn't because it wasn't, they didn't think it was any threat to England or anything, and therefore there was no cover-up.
Okay. Margaret Thatcher was asked at a dinner party by a friend of Nick Pope. Now, Nick Pope used to work for the Ministry of Defense as an investigator.
Is Margaret Thatcher is Nick Pope's
was the
girlfriend?
Former Prime Minister of England.
Okay.
Oh, Maggie.
So, Maggie Thatcher. Yeah. I just had a... I don't like Maggie Thatcher, but what the hell. She was in the know. She was the prime minister.
So what did she say to him?
She said to the woman, and you know, you've got the prime minister pigeonholed at a dinner party. Why not ask her a question if you're interested in something? What about Rendlesham? She asked her. Thatcher looked at her and said, you have to get your facts straight, and you can't tell the people the truth. And the person said, Madam Thatcher, what do you mean you can't tell the people the truth? Thatcher said, you have to get your facts straight and you can't tell the people the truth, referring strictly to Rendlesham. So that would suggest a bit of a cover-up.
Yeah. So that means cover-up if you can't tell the people the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you
so
can't
in other
handle
words,
the truth.
So in other words, they did think there was something there that would cause the so-called panic that governments are always
worried
about.
Well, you asked a minute ago about physical evidence. And according, if you watch this YouTube video, and I find it interesting, and maybe Mark and I might have a bit of a disagreement on the amount of radiation that involved, but apparently there were at least some indications that the amount of radiation spiked to 10 times normal. Now that's in some dispute, although there is a Ministry of Defense document that says that. Now, is it right or wrong? I don't know. It's just the official position. Penniston and Burroughs got sick. Now, apparently they don't want to broadcast everywhere. You know, sometimes people frankly get cancer and they don't want to talk about it. Fine, that's a personal decision. But they petitioned, they're American, well, one's American, one's British, so I would assume this is Penniston. And they both tried to get their medical records.
Have you tried to get your medical records from around here?
From
your doctor? Never mind the government.
It was such an unusual procedure that they eventually hired a lawyer, and it took decades, and they went to former congresspeople. The congresspeople said this was so unusual, and they were so angry about the way they were treated. You know, and these are angry guys. I mean, they thought they were really screwed over by the government.
Yeah, you were telling me some of the medical records when they got it were blacked out.
Now, why? And if there's no effect of radiation, which presumably they don't release the medical records because they don't want, the bodies are evidence.
But this all goes to sort of secondary evidence, right?
But why would you redact? Yeah. Why would you black out a medical record?
Yeah.
That's crazy. I mean,
well, I've been on sort of the skeptical side whether this incident, whether there really was a craft of unknown origin in the story at all. But when I hear about the medical records and the reluctance to give up the medical records.
Condilation.
I just kind of wonder.
It's a red flag, isn't it?
Yeah, where the guys got any ailment from, whether it was from, must have been from radiation. But
to me, it's self-repairing. We had nothing like that.
But let's say the lack of radiation wouldn't change my mind at all, because it's not clear to me that some sort of craft from the future or from another extraterrestrial origin would necessarily have any radiation of any sort.
Anyway. One more point I want to get in before we switch over to our media thing for today.
All right.
They were, and this echoes of Roswell.
Roswell.
Apparently they were threatened not only with end of careers, but there's one, I don't know if Pope refers to it, but some of the personnel were said, bullets are free or something like that, or bullets are inexpensive.
See, that's not effective. What you need to say is you're going to have to go to a meeting for 10 hours a day for the rest of your career. That would scare people.
Okay, on the probe, dear listeners, we always like to expose the facts, and we like you to sort of make up your mind whether things happened or not, or do further research. But we sort of like to do a wrap-up at the end.
Go first. What do you think?
I am...
1 out of 10.
Okay, the Geiger counter they used had a scale of 1 to 5, so let's go with the Geiger scale.
No, let's go 1 to 10.
Okay, 1 to 10.
Okay, 1 to 10.
10 being certainty, 1 being...
I'm a 7.
Okay, Mark?
No, Edward, you go ahead.
No, mine might be a little longer because
I want to make sure it comes down to a certain average, so you have to actually put your number in before I figure out what my number is.
We just want a number because we have to move on.
I would say my number is, I'm thinking it's a 4.
Out of 10, really? So you'll think it happened then, basically.
We heard HALT out there, and I'm thinking, I can't accept that it's exclusively a lighthouse or stars. I mean, something happened.
Okay, the last point I want to make is that when they were interrogated, apparently... the service people, because of the incident, not the interrogation, but because of the incident, acquired post-traumatic stress syndrome. That's big-time stress. That's wartime stress. So what happened that did that to them? So what?
A number.
If I put everything together, if Roswell and Aztec are a 10, this is a 9.5.
Woo, woo.
Way up there, yeah.
Okay, dear listeners, after this Debussy girl with the flaxen hair played by Walter Gieseking.
Watch your language.
We will come back and talk about Paul.
Thank you.
We're back, and the program is The Probe.
The Probe.
With Ed O'Reilly, Mark O'Connor, and Robert Selby. And Ed is having fun with the theremin.
Turn it up some, Ed.
We're going to actually switch gears here to something that we've all watched recently, and it's the film Paul.
Which wouldn't sound like a UFO alien film, but really is.
It really is, with a real... I mean, as soon as you see Paul in that film, you think, yeah, that's what aliens look like. It's just that they've done the little animated guy. Anyway, Paul, whose voice is done
Shock
by the Canadian actor Seth Rogen, he's the alien. And boy, does he ever look like what you may have imagined is an alien. And
Mark has just turned red here.
I think I will throw the ball to Mark because he's the one that introduced us to the film. I must say it's delightful, and there's a lot of good UFO alien stuff in there.
Yeah, just a very quick summary. Two nerds from the UK have long dreamed of doing a trip to Comic-Con and then doing all of the UFO highlights. They want Area 51, the Black Mail Box, they want where Star Trek was filmed, they got a whole route, a whole vacation planned around this. And as fate would have it, they are being chased by two rednecks that they've turned off the wrong way, and a vehicle in front of them completely wipes out, and it has this alien who's been captured in Roswell, the Roswell incident. The premise is that alien's been captured, kept in Area 51 all these years, and he's made a run for it.
And he's a fugitive.
He's a fugitive, and he
appears. Outlasted his usefulness for the government, so they want to maybe cut him up, I guess. So
he's looking for a one-armed alien.
Right, so we get a movie that allows them to take every UFO story, Roswell, etc., everything you know about aliens and popular culture.
Including X-Files.
Close Encounters.
Well, basically, he's trapped on a planet of barbarians, right, from his perspective. I mean, he's not judgmental, but, you know, he's a superior being, and, you know, he's basically trapped on a planet of semi-intelligent monkeys.
Except they don't play him as some sort of remote intellectual. He's just the opposite. You just heard how he's like, oh, Marvin's my man, Marvin Gaye.
Well, he's trying to fit in, right? You know?
So let's hear a few little clips from Paul, a series of little clips of some of the scenes. It's a very profane movie, I must say, so it's been edited.
Not any more profane than O'Reilly.
Here we go.
Poor little thing.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Just watch.
It's a miracle.
Oh, man, I'm going to miss these.
Why would you do that?
I'm not gonna eat a dead bird, am I?
That's here where I'm speaking English, you know, so, you know, how do aliens Nattery communicate with us?
Don't screw it. That's good thinking, okay? Stay conspicuous. That's good.
How come I can understand you? Are you using some sort of neural language router?
Actually, I'm speaking English, you f***ing idiot.
So that's Paul, like, he's in the travel caravan with our two English fellows, and the guy's saying, how can I understand you? And he says, I'm speaking effing English, idiot. Yeah.
Isn't it strange? Those two Englishmen came over to the States because they wanted to see Roswell, but they didn't mention Bentwaters or Rendlesham Forest once.
Too close to home.
Yeah, the UK Roswell just rates a zero in the movie. It is kind of funny, isn't it?
Well, I must say, I agree with them. I think Roswell is number one.
Right.
Paul looks just like the classic gray alien, too, with the oval
eyes. He's green.
Yeah, except his eyes are completely blue.
But I mean the shape. You know,
This is one of the themes of the movie, and actually it's one of the themes of our show. We do a UFO case, and then we try to have a cultural aspect to our show to talk about the deep impact that UFO mythology, if you will, has had on our culture and music and our books and our movies and our TV shows. Well, here, you can't top this. We got a movie that actually uses that, the very thing that our show is about. This is Paul talking about, well, popular culture here on The Probe.
Why are you here, Paul?
I was here on a science mission, actually, and then I had some spaceship-related
problems, and I kind of crashed. Lucky for me, though, this little girl, she pulls me out of the wreck. Next thing I know, guys arrive, cart me off to the base.
What have you been doing here all this time?
You know, I've been kicking back, man. I've been shooting the shit. I've been advising the government.
Not just the government.
Now, I want him to have some kind of a special power, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Something
yeah.
Messianic.
Okay, Steven. How about cellular revivification?
Yeah, yeah, I don't know what that is.
Oh, restoration of damaged tissue through telepathic manipulation of intrinsic field memory.
What's that mean?
It means healing, Mr. Spielberg.
Yeah, right, okay. Healing. Yeah, like by touch or something like that. Like maybe his finger lights up at the end when he reaches out and touches?
Maybe. You know, sometimes I find less is more.
Hey, trust me.
You'd be surprised how much he's influenced popular culture over the last 60 years. Agent Mulder was right.
Agent Mulder was my idea.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah!
That's cool.
Ooh, pump that earth, man. I like this song. Marvin's my boy.
This is the unexpurgated version of the probe this week, folks. We're just Potty Mouth Incorporated.
I took out all the F-bombs.
The thing about Paul that I really love is, okay, his eyes are blue. Rest of his body looks like the typical alien. But even though Paul can be very profane and very with it popular culture, he knows all the things to say, all the foods, all the things that humans do. But his eyes are very large and liquid and very expressive. And Paul, at certain parts of this film, has a lot of human-like compassion. The eyes are really outstanding. They're large and liquid blue.
I don't know, and he's very profane. He's the most profane character in the whole movie. The alien's the one that likes to...
Except the girl in the trailer park.
Ruth.
You know, she's they pull into this trailer park really quickly, and they realized it's sort of... What would you call them, Mark?
Fundamentalist Christians.
And do
we want to hear the whole thing about evolution or just her learning how to swear?
Learning how to swear.
Her learning how to swear is really funny because she was a good little Christian girl and she's never sworn before. But then she makes up for lost time. She feels a little bit freer with these two Englishmen and Paul. Although Paul is a little bit more profane than the two Englishmen.
But he uses human profanities, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Paul does.
Yeah.
Okay, but
he doesn't curse in his own language. If he did, we'd never know.
But Ruth is, you know, anti-Darwin. She wears a T-shirt that has a picture of God
shooting Darwin, wasn't it?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, evolution and human beings have only been on Earth 5,000 years. Like, that perspective, that point of view.
Yeah.
And, of course, when Paul emerges from the bathroom, how do you explain me? She faints dead away because there's proof that not quite the way she thought.
Is that why she fainted?
I think so. Anyway, here we go. This is Ruth learning to swear, freeing herself up.
I can drink.
If you like.
I can fornicate.
Maybe.
I can curse.
Oh, yeah.
Penises.
Ruth.
Assing, hairy boobs, poop, farting buttholes.
Ruth, I'm not sure this is helping.
Funny, too, because I don't know what's her name, the actress, but she's very good.
Yeah, she plays the role very well.
Yeah, pretty, too.
You know, and all those, it's so inventive, it's like, well, it's not the most banned, profane words, but they are, you know, it's enough like, yeah, we can play it on the show. Our audience won't get offended. The words are okay, but her creativity and becoming profane and exploring the whole idea of magical words that are offensive to people, so funny.
A whole new world to her.
One of my favorite parts is, I mean, our show is called The Probe, and it is sort of, I guess it has perhaps two meanings, but most common narratives of abductees is that when they were taken into the spaceship, especially the males, they've got something about being probed. And a lot of reports from these males are that they have been probed.
Where,
and,
Bobby?
Well, where do you think, Ed?
And what are they looking for?
I don't think we can trust Ed to say anything on the show anymore. I'm going to have to kill your mic, Ed. Sorry.
Too late.
And so... But that is actually one of the, I'd say, for homophobic males, one of the most horrifying things that you can think of someone putting something in your anus. And these two rednecks that they meet up with the second time, I think Mark has a clip of them chasing the Englishman and the girl to the trailer, and someone opens the door of the trailer.
Right. Well, maybe set up the scene, which is they go into this diner that is all set up for UFOs. You can get UFO milkshakes and bumper stickers, and they offend these two rednecks who think that they're gay and have a very narrow view of that. And
think of the film Deliverance.
Right, in their rush. That's right. I think they even mentioned that.
Yeah, I think they do, yeah.
In their rush to get out, they back in to these guys' pickup truck, damage it, and then they take off. Well, a little later on, don't they meet up again? And the rednecks are out for revenge, coming down, chasing them into their travel trailer where Paul is, and he opens up the door, and he kind of says the catchphrase that I think we're using it in our advertisements now, our promos for our show. So here is Paul telling them how it's going to be.
Yo, nuts! It's probing time.
Ha! Only one of us fainted.
That's the sound of the rednecks fainting.
That is the rednecks fainting.
Yeah.
That's a common theme, a common repeating gag in the movie is you see Paul, you faint. So again, they're all tough redneck guys, and then they faint dead away. It's probing time, and they see the alien and just faint. And then when the police go to interview them, they are like, they can't talk about it. They're just shaking their heads. We haven't seen anything.
Serious question.
Ed's got two fingers up like he's going to probe us now.
All right, here's one finger for you. I won't say which one. Serious question. In today's world, we've had 2001, we've had Star Wars, we've had Star Trek. If average John Q. citizen or Joanna Q. citizen were to walk down the road and see Paul, see a real extraterrestrial, you think they'd faint nowadays?
Well, in fact, they actually deal with that on the movie. Paul says, of course, people have been fed my image for the last 60 years.
Yeah.
Conditioned, right. Conditioned,
yeah,
is the right word.
Yeah.
Conditioned to expect this. So would they?
This is not 1938 with Orson Welles.
If I saw an alien, would I freak out? I think I would.
The thing is,
we're quite familiar with the Paul alien image. We'd see him and we'd recognize him and we'd be surprised, but we might not necessarily faint. But if we saw a real alien that didn't look like what we've been fed over the years, the grays and the greens, we might faint.
Well, I suppose it depends on what it was. What it looked like and what it was doing. I suppose if it came at you with a probe or something, you might kind of, oh my God, here I go. But what I'm saying is, this is not 1938. We're not going to run out into the streets, you know, fearing an invasion anymore. We're not the same populace that we used to be. And he's off snoring again. They both are. Stanton Friedman says there was a panic. So I'll go with Stanton. You guys can go with your own bogus.
I'm one of the nasty, noisy negatives.
You certainly are. You do it quite well. But anyway, I don't think things have changed. We're not the same people. Humanity has evolved beyond that.
Are you sure? Have you been looking at the current situation in the world? Have we really evolved? I would like to say
I
yes.
I thought you were the one who was so, you know, we were progressing up the ladder, and I was the pessimist.
Oh, no, I'm a DJ personality. I'm here to entertain now. You can't catch me in the corner with my own personal
opinion. Do we have the clip of Paul saying that why would he want to probe anyone?
Wait, dude, do you want to hear it?
I want to hear that one.
Okay.
That one's good.
Okay, so, yeah, why would aliens want to probe us? Here's the answer.
Are you an alien?
To you I am, yes.
Are you going to probe us? Why does everyone always assume that? What am I doing? Am I harvesting farts? How much can I learn from an ass?
Well, that is so funny.
We all had them when we went to school. We learned something.
You see, I assume you can learn a lot from an ass.
So, you know, what are they doing? Harvesting farts because that's what powers your interstellar drives? I mean, it is funny. How much can I learn from an ass?
Methane, the Brits say, we say methane, can be quite explosive.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, make a bomb out of methane, can't you?
Let's kind of wrap up. Shall we listen to one more Debussy before we sign off?
Sure, Bob.
How about a short one? Le Vent dans la Plaine, which is number 3. And we'll be back to say goodbye. Thank you.
You have been listening to The Probe with Ed O'Reilly, Mark O'Connor, and Robert Selby. And we'd like to...
We just did Rendlesham. Hope you enjoyed it.
And Paul. And we'd like to say goodbye and until next time. And, yeah, Mark?
Well, we have a couple of minutes to say goodbye to our audience before we hand things over. And
this is number 9 in the series, right?
I don't know if that's...
Just a reminder again, if you are interested in Rendlesham, and Nick Pope, I think, is a very credible source, just go onto YouTube. Type in Nick Pope, Rendlesham, and there's a whole host of videos, about an hour long each, on this case, on Roswell, on other cases, and it's quite interesting.
If you want a site that has all of the source documentation, the clip from the audio tape, the full audio tape of Colonel Hult, if you want the written statements from the 5 witnesses, if you want a copy of the drawing that Jim Pennison made, they're all available on the Ian Ridpath website. He's a noted UFO skeptic and scientist, etc. So if you go Ian, R-I-D-P-A-T-H, you will find all that source documentation. It's a treasure trove. Whether you agree with his skeptical position or not, if you just want to see the source documents and make up your own mind, All those source documents are there. So it's an unbelievable case from that
Someday I'd like to, maybe we could get into a little bit. Maybe it's just too much to get in. It's usually a sky above thing, but... I'd like to make a connection, a correlation, between the exoplanet discoveries, and now there's one 11 light years away, and potential UFOs.
We'll do that on the sky above sometime, right?
We have one more thing that we'd like to say, though.
Oh, yes, we know what it is. It's our new tagline. It's
probing time!
Watch out for the probe.
See you next time.
Okay. And here he is, a little bit more Debussy.